Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 11, delivered on September 25, 2018. The title of this lecture is The Time Value of Money. Today, the time value of money. A couple of things to begin with. I do this on a calculator. I do not do this with tables. I understand that. Is it still the case that in your accounting classes you use tables in the back of the book, or do you use calculators now to find time values of money? Do you use those tables with the numbers, the factors, the value factors? If any of you do? Okay. And the rest of you can't answer it? Okay. Let's work on the first things first. Yes, we'll use calculators. And I'm going to show you something here if you don't already know about it. The calculator of choice is a TI 83, 83 plus, 84, or Inspire. That is a financial wizard's calculator. It's got amazing financial apps. It's been around for decades, literally decades, and there are financial calculators that TI makes, smaller ones, cheaper ones. They're not nearly as friendly as TI 83, 84. Also, you can buy Hewlett-Packard's financial calculators. They've been around since the 1980s as well, unchanged. The 12C, HP 12C, is a financial calculator. It's great, but it uses a math. It doesn't use algebraic notation. It uses an alternative called reverse Polish notation. Let me show you here. If you don't, now you probably already know about this. At least some of you do, but I'm going to show you anyway. And again, I don't have my bookmark, so I'm going to have to. It's on a Google download site where I'm going to take you. Yeah, right here. See this right here? This site right here. Now, let me put this for you. Word. If you want to key this in. And I'll make that a lot bigger if I make it as big as I can. Whoops. That's about as good as I can do for it. But there you go. If you want to download this, write it down. And remember that you have to capitalize. The internet does use upper and lower case, contrary to what some people believe, especially those who want to use lowercase for their name spellings and registrations. I'll show you if you want to get that. And I'll post this on my website on isu-prof.com as well. But save. Download calculator. And it will make sure you save the file in case your original ever gets corrupted. And you're going to have to extract it all. And what I do with this is I send the actual execution file, this one, VTI-83. Just send it to your desktop. Where is my send to? Down? There it is. Wow. Okay, enough of that. Here we go. There it is, right there. See it? VTI-83 shortcut. This is a TI-83 calculator. It's real. It works just like the real McCoy. And this is where you can get all kinds of financial applications. It's under apps, finance, and all of these are the ones, I mean, I won't even use all of these in the class, but this is your way. And if you don't want to do algebraic equations, which are oftentimes, I'll show you the formulas, at least some of them. But this is a way that you can do these problems with, in fact, some of these would be a real pain in the butt if you had to do them by hand, or with those tables that are still apparently being used in accounting classes. This will take you through all of the different things you will be required to do. I don't think there's anything in the homework for these chapters that you couldn't do either with quick arithmetic on the calculator or with one of these apps, finance apps. So I will be showing you how to do things this way. So for example, just to dive into it, what's your favorite kind of, what car, what would you like to buy for your first car?
Like realistically?
Don't go into the, I want a Maserati. No, you can't have one. And be real, too. Don't get some ugly-ass car like one of those, what's that one they call the Cube, or, and then there's that one called Soul. Have you seen that one? It's called the Soul. I ran into one of those. I destroyed a Soul. I felt really bad, too. What do you want?
Say like a Ford Fusion.
A Ford Fusion. Okay. I'm not judging you. I'm not judging you. Really? A few? Oh, okay. Okay. Let's have a look at Ford Fusion. Okay. Now, the manufacturer's suggested retail price is $22,840. Now, you could probably negotiate that down, but then get some extras on it, you know, like the leather seating and stuff like that. Maybe the fuzzy dice to hang down. But we'll say that's fair. Let's say out the door, it is $22,840, tax and title. Now, these car dealers are very interested in making sure that you can have that car. So they will finance the whole thing, and they've got they're running one of their specials. We'll 5 year. Let's say the APR is, I don't know. Let's do about 6.29%. What are the monthly payments? Now, the key here, with all of these problems that I'm going to take you through, or anything that has to do with an annuity, a stream of payments, you need to know the timing. I gave you an annual percentage rate. Then I asked for monthly. So in other words, I need to make everything months in this. So we're going to do something real quick here. I'm going to take you back, and you might want to just write down the steps one after the other. Click apps. By the way, I do want you to have your computers with you on and open on Thursday so that we can do these just one after the other until you're so used to it that it's just like you can close your eyes and do it. Apps. Either type one or toggle two. It's already on that, so you can hit enter. Now, a lot of the problems we're going to do will be TVM. Time value of money. Time value of money. And that's the subject of this chapter, time value of money. Now we'll do one, or you can just hit enter since the cursor's on that. Now here's where you go. Follow with me. There are a couple of little twists that you've got to be careful. You've got to be careful about these. One thing is the N. We said 5 years, but we are asking about monthly stuff, monthly. So 5 years, and we would have to times that by 12. Now, don't hit enter, just toggle down. The calculator knows what it's doing. If you tell it, talk to it too much like it's a baby, it's going to smack you. Just drop the cursor down to I percent. Now, percent, and I think I said this before, I probably have. Financial calculators, if you're doing an app, it wants a percentage. If you're doing arithmetic or algebra, you have to do it the hardcore way with the decimals. Remember the difference. If it's any kind of an app, you're going to key in a percentage, okay? So in this case, we said 6.29%. But that was an annual percentage rate. We are talking about months, so we're going to have to divide that by 12 months. Don't forget to do that. Don't forget to do that. Now, sometimes you actually have to bring out an interest rate. So in a case like that, if you're calculating it, it will give you an answer, and then you have to times it by the number of periods per year. Okay. The price value, the present value. Now, here's an important thing. This has been true of financial calculators ever since they started showing up in the early 1980s. You always put in a present value as a negative. And also, you have to know, and I'll bet a lot of you were never told there's a difference between a minus and a negative. Don't use this. It has a minus sign there. Use that. Well, we're borrowing $22,840. That's the present value of the loan, how much we're going to get. Now, a couple of things along the way here. We're going to need the payment. See that FV? That would be if there were a kicker at the end of the loan. I mean, with bonds, once you know how to do this, bonds are going to be really easy. But bonds always have $1,000 that's paid at the end. So if you were calculating something about a corporate or a government bond, you'd need a $1,000 there or something else. Now, also interestingly enough, leases. There are a lot of car companies that offer you leases. Leases always have cheap payments, but at the end, like after 3 years, if you want to keep the car, you have to pay a balloon payment at the 3-year mark. So that would be where you'd have an FV. Leave these alone. P over Y and C over I. Now, on this one, if it is an ordinary annuity, payments happen at the end of the period. If it's an annuity due, they happen at the beginning of the period. So in this case, they'd happen at the end of the period. When would you have an annuity that has the payments begin at the beginning of the period? In other words, an annuity due? There are actually a lot of times. In financial planning, suddenly your significant other has a baby. Well, as soon as the delivery happens, you rush to your financial planner and say, I need to plan for this child's college education. So you would probably put your first payment in right away. And then at the child's first birthday, another one, et cetera. That would be an annuity due. So that at the age of 17, you put in your last payment, it all carries one more year, and the kid goes to college, and all that money you save pays for maybe about half of the first semester's tuition. I mean, it's actually, if you plan carefully, that's what financial planning is all about. Just getting people in front of problems far enough so that when they happen, it's covered. You got people, well, in 2 years, I got to send my kid to college. How much do I put into the bank every month now? Well, about $1 million, boy. But anyway, go back up here. Just toggle back up to payment. And then green makes green. Alpha means enter solve. Well, spank me. there's your payment, $444.65 a month. Right there. 444.65. You got it. Now, I guarantee you it would take considerably longer, even if you were using the tables approach with annuities, that the tables at the back of finance books and accounting books. This would take you a lot longer than this. It just pops right out at you. Now, always, almost always, I show you how to do something before I actually explain what it is we do, how we do it. This is the how. You've now figured out how to do a monthly, how to calculate your monthly payment. Now, here's an interesting twist that might be worth knowing. This calculator, see, all of those values, you can calculate any one of them. If you got the other ones in there and you put it on the one that you need, you can say alpha solve. So, madam, you are going to be making your first job. What's your major?
Human resources.
Well, actually, you're going to make pretty decent money. I got a couple that are coming out above $60,000 a year, which is really depressing, considering that that's one of the higher salaries. Human resources. Let's say that you get your first job, $60,000 a year. So on a monthly basis, you're going to be making, what, $5,000? Oh, $5,000, sorry. $5,000 a month. Okay, now we take out, traditionally we take out about 15% for taxes. That would be $500, $750 on it. So that would be $4,250. Now your living expenses are probably going to constitute about 30% of that, so we're going to have zero. Well, let's do it this way. 0, 5, 7. -1,275. 25, whoops, 50 minus 75 is 75. 4, 2 minus 1 minus 1. $30,375. So your car payment, they're going to say, we don't want you to have a car payment that's more than 20% of your disposable income after you've paid your tax, with taxes withheld and your basic living expenses. So times 20%, oh, that's roughly, let's say, $600. There's your target. Now, okay, I can tell the calculator, you tell me how much I can borrow if I want to make $600 a month payments. This becomes your negotiating tool. Because now I can say, go take it up to PV, alpha solve. And I can buy about a $30,800 car. And that's what you say, out the door, tax and title. That's what I want to the dealer. Don't give me anything more than that. If you can make it work so that the car out the door with everything included on tax, title, car, steering wheel, all that, then we're talking right there. There it is. Okay? That is essentially how we help people to talk about everything from their home loans. We figure out, okay, what's the bank going to want as a percentage of income? That means that's your percentage for these payments. Okay, then we can calculate what payment can be afforded, what will pass through the loan officer, and then you say, all right, this is what I have to have, or we don't have a deal. That amount of money up there. That's how we do it. And that's a good negotiating way. That way you know exactly how far it's going to go. And if they can't make it work for you, you just say, no, I'll find someone who can make it work for me. Anyway, enough of that. For now. and then to get out of there, you say second quit, and you're out. But there's an interesting other side to this, too, and I'll show you that in a while, too. But please bring your calculators, either a physical calculator or the computer with this calculator on it, on the next class we have together. Now, let me move forward. Ooh, I got enough for Chick-fil-A tonight. Yeah. A dollar. Okay. Now, this dollar belongs to you, sir, okay?
Thank you so much.
Sir, I should like to borrow that dollar from you for a year.
Okay.
Okay, so you lend it to me for a year. Okay, it's a year. I'm a little older. My cholesterol's kind of gone up a little bit, but, you know, I'm still alive. So here's your dollar back.
Thank you.
Good. Now, what are you going to say to me? Huh?
Do you need more money?
No. Oh, for God's sake. What are you, some kind of Samaritan? My God, we're in business. We destroy people's lives and hopes.
Thank you.
No. Bro. Interest. I cheated you. Okay. What's your major?
Finance, actually.
Give it to me. For the love of God. Interest! You charge interest for money. Money tomorrow is not worth as much today because, well, money in a year. You know, why is money in a year not worth as much as it is today? Can you tell me? No, that's actually not the basic reason. That is a reason, but that's an extra reason. There's a fundamental reason. I have a feeling you weren't taught this in economics. There's a fundamental reason for interest rates that is underneath every other reason.
The money that could be made with the time?
Well, yeah, but there's something else, even more basic. It's this. Madam, do you eat?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. What's your favorite food?
Chick-fil-A.
Oh, well, seriously, I mean, they are just so... the guy who owns it is a total creep of a human being, but they're so darn good. I mean, chickens die happy when they think they're going to Chick-fil-A. You see, by giving up money now to someone else, you are foregoing consumption. You are giving up your own use of the money, regardless of what it is. At the heart of it, you have surrendered your use of money. What we mean by that is that interest rates at their very bottom, this core interest rate, underneath all other interest rates, is the opportunity cost of foregone consumption. Purely. Underneath, there are a lot of other things like inflation, default risk, maturity risk, illiquidity risk. All those are definitely there, but underneath all of those is this fundamental surrender of your money. You've given it up. Therefore, the interest rate at the bottom of all other interest rates is an opportunity cost of foregone consumption. And also, it's not a price. Interest rates aren't prices. They are actually rental rates. That's why we call it an interest rate, is because literally, it is a rental rate on money. Now, you, madam, own some apartment buildings. Now, interestingly enough, you rent apartments near the campus. And then you also rent apartments in an upscale part of town. Now, are you going to charge the same interest rate to the campus kids as you are to the upscale 40-something crowd in the nice part of town? Why not? No, you said. Why not?
Because they're
here, they're animals. They're scrupulous. In fact, they are also higher default risk than they're more likely to. You see, there is risk involved in any rental rate, whether it's an apartment rental rate or a rental rate on money. There is risk involved, and that risk is different for different categories of application of the interest of the rate. So with a rental rate, you're going to charge down here a higher rate because there's all, you know very well that there is a higher chance down here that they're going to do something really, really dangerous, like maybe even make the apartment into a mosh pit at some point and then say free Addy for everyone or something like that. But you know very well that a 40-something crowd that goes, it works in the professional places, they don't do things like that. They drink veggie smoothies and things like that. Have you seen Panera has a kale smoothie? Kale. It was an abomination hated by God as a plant, and now they've made it into a smoothie, and they leave it green. Anyway, let me get back on track here. What I'm trying to get at here is that rate does vary. And we're going to talk about what the actual factors are down to the numbers. In other words, we're going to liquidate the rate, those risks, into actual percentage points. A couple of quick terminology things. You've heard me say this before, and I'll just formalize it now. A basis point is a hundredth of a percent. So if I say the yield spread between the 7 and the 10-year right now is 4 basis points, that means that there is 4 one-hundredths of a percent difference between the two. So that's one thing that's always important for you. When I say APR, that's an annual percentage rate. There's actually another interest rate that's hiding under the surface. You see, compounding of interest makes the interest rate actually change. So in this case, that APR is actually kind of misleading, because it's not taking into account the fact that interest is being charged on interest. And so there is another interest rate that we might be kind of interested in talking about sometimes. It's called the effective rate. Now, the effective rate is actually easy. It's just an quick, dirty arithmetic formula. You just take 1 plus the APR divided by the number of compoundings per year to the number of compoundings per year. It actually doesn't matter how much money you're borrowing or lending. It's just there. And I close that watch. In this case, what you would do is I would just say open parenthesis 1 plus. And remember, you're in arithmetic now, so you're going to do it the old-fashioned way. 0.0629 divided by 12 compoundings per year to the 12th power. Notice that the amount you borrow and the number of years doesn't matter to effective rate. Again, the amount you borrow and the number of years you borrow or periods you borrow doesn't matter. And then you minus 1. Don't forget the minus the 1 like I forgot to write in the formula here. In this case, the effective rate is 6.47%. It's a little more. Now, let's make sure. Compoundings. Monthly is 12, right? Okay, what word would I use if it were twice a year? Good, semi-annual. And then if I do it every 3 months, quarterly, every month, that was easy. How about twice a month? Say it. Semi-monthly. Bi-monthly would be every 2 months. Interesting. Okay, weekly. What would weekly be? What would weekly be?
Just weekly?
Yeah, weekly.
Same thing as monthly.
that's what we'd say. Yeah, I'm waiting to see if you're. I could get you off guard there. Yeah, it's just weekly. Okay, by the way, how many weeks are in a year? Yeah, I want to make sure you know 52 because I actually did that on a test once and I had several students come up and ask me how many weeks were in a year. And when I looked, when I spoke derisively to them, they nearly broke into tears. So I don't want to have that happen again. It's 52 weeks in a year, damn it. Okay, now, daily. Daily. How many compoundings does that? What's the number for daily? Huh? Believe it or not, it's actually 365 and 360. Interestingly, historically, we would use the 365 here and the 360 here. That was old school. It's finally beginning to let up. I think this book just says 365 in both cases, or 360 in both cases. But you could very well run into some of the computer systems running from before things got so simplified that might be running 365 up here and 360 down here. That was the old way we did it. Well, there actually was a reason for that too. 360 is actually a number. Dividing by 360, there's a trick. It's an old trick going back centuries. So they would say 360 here because there are 360 banker's days in a year. If you want to be technically right, it's 365.25. But that's getting a little bit too technical. So I believe that the textbook now just uses 365 for both. I'll have to check that because the one I was using last time used 365 for both.
It says 7 days, it's
360. What?
It says banks use 360.
Okay, oh, that's right. That's right. This is Burke DiMaggio. Yes, they do concede the 360, the banker's holidays. Five banker's holidays a year. Although now we even have more than that, so. Enough. Now. Let me do something here. Interest rates are built. They grow on from a base. Like I said, there's a base rate. Now, interestingly, banks and other kinds of financial institutions say that the base rate is something different. Some say it's one thing, some say it's another. Some say that, well, a U.S. Treasury bill, a very short-term U.S. Treasury bill, its annualized rate is the rate you should always use as the rock base. Others say that is awfully, that is too rock base. They use one that's on top of that, like the prime rate, the Fed funds rate, the LIBOR rate. There's a lot of base rates, but the bottom, the lowest that you could possibly get, it's called the risk-free rate, and it's actually kind of a theoretical thing. So the best one, the best we can do is a short-term treasury bill. But anyway, enough of that. And again, I caution you, I show you how to do things before I explain why. Madam, would you like to be a millionaire? You seem awfully, you know, blasé about it. Ah, maybe, maybe not. You know, I'm getting close to that time when, you know, old age means is the same as starvation. I should have planned better back in the day, but it didn't happen. You could plan for to be a millionaire, okay? You could too. You, sir, could. Can you imagine that you could say, all right, I want to retire at age 50 with $1 million in the bank. Okay? Sounds good, doesn't it?
Okay.
Well, okay.
I'll just have more.
Well, actually, the amount you would, it's stunning. You folks, There was this very reputable financial planner, finance guru. He did a calculation to figure out how much you would really need to retire at 70 and survive for your projected lifespan, which the rest of your life, which would be about 30 years from there. And I mean, the number he came up with, it was heavily, when you first see it, you just say, there is no way. And then you start looking at the math of it and the calculations, the projections. Yeah, that's about what you'd need. How much is that that you would need if you wanted to retire at about 70 and live comfortably till you were 100? About $31 million. Yeah, $31 million. You guys going to live on the streets when you're old? Yeah. I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, there, nah. And I went through, yep, that's right. Yep, that's a very conservative, yeah, conservative projection. Yeah, that's, holy cow. Whoa. I'm glad I'll be dead because you guys are going to be bitchy about that. But anyway. Let's do one here. You would like to be have $1 million, okay? $1 million, I mean, you could buy cat food, you know, maybe once a week have Spam, you know, good times. So, you're what, about 21?
20.
Okay. So that would mean that we need 50 years on you. How much would you need to put in the bank right now? To have $1 million in 50 years if the account paid 5.25% compounded quarterly. Not hard at all. I mean, I can do this one on the calculator, but it's some of them, it's almost faster just to do it by the math. Look, a future value is the present value of the money times 1 plus the interest rate divided by the number of compoundings to the years divided by the compoundings. D is the number of compoundings, and it's the number of years. I mean, you'll probably see every book has its own notation for this. Not hard to do, though. So in this case, your future value would be 1 million times 1 plus 0.0525 over quarterly 4 to the 4 times to the 50 times 4. You got to be careful with parentheses. Do trap things. The calculator understands hierarchy of operations. You've got to make sure that you give it to that calculator. Do you see what that calculator on the screen just did? Do you see that? It turned off, just like a normal, regular TI-83 will turn off. This calculator turns off. A regular TI-83 turns off to save battery. Why does this calculator do that? It just irritates the hell out of me that it. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, see, it'll go off again. We gotta save battery. This computer might run out of battery. Bro, it's not going to run out of battery, okay? Anyway, I'm losing my cool here. Okay, we want to take $1 million. 100,000,000 times. And I use the keyboard for this. You can click on the buttons too. Whoops. I forgot this keyboard can't do parentheses. Open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4, close the parenthesis, raise to the, now open the parenthesis and just do the 4 times 50. In other words, there are 200 quarters in 50 years. Close the parenthesis and just say, if I put in, actually, this one is putting in $1,000,000 now. How much would I have? I'd have, wow, that's pretty good. I'd have $13 million if I put the money in now. Now let's do it the other way. That means if I put in $1 million now, I'd have $13,570,831. Now let's turn it around. The present value would be the 1 million times 1 plus 0.0525 over 4 to the negative 4 times 50, or 50 times 4. You just take it the opposite way with a negative exponent, which means that you're dividing. A negative exponent, I'm sure you remember somewhere, a negative exponent is the same as divided by. So let's take it the other way. Now we'll say 1 million times, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0525, close the parenthesis, to the open parenthesis, 4 times 50. Whoops, I screwed it up there. To the negative 4 times 50. Oh, matter of fact, watch. I'm going to move the cursor back over. And I'm going to say second insert divided by 4. If you don't use insert, it overwrites. If you do use insert, it literally sticks it in. Keep that in mind. And I salvaged the formula. Thank you. Enter. Well, actually, that's not too bad. In order to have $1 million in 50 years, I would need to put in $73,687.46 now. Yeah. So it actually, on the calculator, I've never been absolutely, I have trust issues. Because, I mean, I've always been pretty sure that the calculator knows that if I put a negative sign here, it's okay, and it will take the negative of this. But I've never been absolutely sure of that. So when you see me do it in the calculator, kind of interesting you notice that. I always put it, open the parentheses, and then put it in.
On the just the
no, there wouldn't be any positive number. There's only one negative happening there. Whether I put it here, the thing that worried me always was that would a TI think that the negative was the exponent and the rest of this was just stuff afterwards? Or does it attach the negative to the calculation up there? That's why I just put the negative inside, just to make sure that it's going to do it negative 4 times 50. Or negative 50 times 4. And like I said, I don't think it actually matters. By the way, here's an interesting thing that you might not know about. Another thing, one of those little tricks of the calculator. Suppose that I had actually made a mistake in this formula. It would have said, well, probably might have yelled at you about an error. Say second enter, which is entry, and it will allow you to take the formula you already used and edit it. We're going to use that trick because there are sometimes when you'll use an app to do a calculation, then you'll want another app to do the same numbers. So you can actually use second entry and then just replace the name of the one app with the name of the other app. But if you screw up a formula, always just say second entry and it'll take you right back in, and then you can just edit the formula. Remember that if I type in just a number, it'll override it. But if I hit second enter, it'll insert it. Did I do that right? Second insert. I didn't do that right. Okay, that's that. Now, so, lump sum. Future value is the present value times 1 plus R over D to the D times N. D is the number of compoundings per year. N is the number of years. And R is the annual percentage rate. The present value is the future value times 1 plus R over D to the negative D times N. That's simple. These are for lump sums. Put money in the bank. How much is it worth in the future? Want to know how much you have to put in the bank to get a specific amount in the future? These are the two formulas, lump sums. And like I said, the calculator, actually, there's one of these is an app to do that. Apps Finance. Time value just for future value or for present value. You can just see that. There's an app for that, but it's actually just as fast to do it this way. Okay? Now, let me take you a step further. These are lump sums. In other words, a plop of money. If you want to talk about a continuing stream of money, we talk about annuities. Annuity just means a stream of cash, a cash flow. Technically, a lump sum is an annuity with one entry. Annuities. Now, there are a couple of different kinds of annuities. There are ordinary annuities. Oh, well, let's do this. Okay, if I talk about there is a level annuity and an unlevel annuity. A level annuity means that the payments in the cash flow are the same. A level annuity means cash flow payments are the same. An unlevel annuity means that they're different. So, for example, a car payment is a level annuity. Your income over your lifetime would be an unlevel annuity because it's going to go up, then it's going to go down because, you know, they fired you, and then it's going to go back up a little bit, then down, and then you'll retire, and it will go down way more. But I want to discourage you, but your lifetime annuity is unlevel. That's why it's a little bit trickier to calculate the value of a person, the present value of a person. Because if it were like a level annuity, wow, we can do those real fast. But unlevel annuities are a little more of a pain in the butt. But they're doable. Okay, now, as I said, there's also the ordinary annuity, payments at the end, and the annuity due, payments at the beginning. And then there's another one, a weird one. It's actually an annuity, but it is forever. An annuity that goes forever is called a perpetuity. That sounds unrealistic. a cash flow that goes forever? Actually, it's not. It's the basis of quite a few calculations. A perpetuity. It's actually, the funniest thing is, it's easy to calculate a perpetuity. They're very easy. And they're actually very useful, too. So one place we could use a perpetuity, if someone says, we get these wealthy people near the ends of the end of their lives, they'll, or when they're getting in their old age, they've been alumni, what they'll do is they'll say, we want to put in a certain amount of money so that, and endow a chair or something like that. So in other words, what they're doing is they're saying, we want to put in enough money so that for every year, for the rest of eternity, the same amount of money can be withdrawn from that account to pay the salary of the professor, pay salaries of assistants, pay all of the bills that are driven by that chair, endowed chair. How much do we have to put in so that this can happen? Oftentimes what we're talking about is how much has to be put in so that every year forever, $350,000 can be drawn out for this endowment. Or for a scholarship, the same thing happens. And that's a perpetuity. And it's actually very easy. We can say very quickly how much you have to donate. 10 million, 15, 20, 25, depending upon what kind of a perpetuity payment it would be. Like some of the scholarships that we actually have here, the donors, it's how much do we have to put in so that we can have five scholarships of $5,000 a year issued in our name? And we work out the numbers. Okay, annuities. Level, unlevel, all that. Let's try one. You, sir. You were moving on through college, and you became romantically involved, and you got married, and all of this, and then there was that first baby. And you're just full of joy. Well, actually, you're exhausted if you were there. I mean, you're tired. I mean, whatever it was for her, it just tore me apart. I was so tired after. But I drove out. I was so excited. I drove out, grabbed literally a 30 box of White Castle cheeseburgers, extra onions, and then I ate those, and then I went to the bank, and they asked me if I would stand outside for a while before I went in because you have 30 White Castle cheeseburgers. But then I say, all right, I need to make sure that my child, you say to them, I want to make sure that my child has enough money to, when that child reaches 18, to be able to go to Illinois State University. For 4 years. I want all the money in there in 4 years. Good. It's very easy to count. And I want to put in my first payment now, and I want each of these to be the same, one now, one a year from now, until the child, one last one at 17, and then the whole amount carries forward one more year to 18, and then on the 18th birthday, I give the kid the money. Here you go. You're taken care of. So the question would be, of course, very quickly, how much are we going to have in that account to pull this off? What is tuition running now a year here? It's like about 20 grand? Huh? And counting the books in there.
Room and board?
Just the tuition. Oh, so we're talking about you'd need room and board, too, because I don't want that kid living with me. You know, the hell with that. Okay, that's the $6,000 more a year. That's about 20 right there. Books, incidentals, bail money for that bad party that went south when the police showed up. Okay, we're talking about probably about $22,000 a year, okay? $22,000 a year. Now, let's say that inflation of tuition runs at about On tuition, it runs about 5% a year. So what we would do is times 1 plus 0.05 to the 18th power. This is going to knock you out. This part right here will knock you out. Guaranteed. So what we need to do is we're adjusting for the inflation. So in other words, that kid, we are going to need, well, we're also going to times this by 4 because we got to get to keep the person here for 4 years. And it turned off. Do you see that? It turns off. Really? There. Okay, let's quit here. Let's get this money out. Clear everything. Clear. Okay. 22,000 times 4 years times, and this is a rough, 1.05 to the 18th power. So in other words, we need to have in the bank $211,782. So what I'll do is we'll just round that to $212,000. Roughly $212,000 is what you'll need to have in the bank. By the way, this is actually very close to a financial planning analysis. What we would do is we would figure out all the goals that a couple or a person would have. And then what we would do is just figure out how much each of the payments would have to be to achieve that goal at the time that people want it. Then add up those payments, say you write me this check every month, and I'll make sure that your dreams come true. As, you know, you want a new house in 5 years. You want a new car every 3 years. You want to put this kid in college in 16 years, this kid in college in 18 years, and all that. We just figure out these payments for each one of them and then say, you write us a check for this every month, and we'll make sure that there's enough to have each of these things when you need it. That's financial planning, the real deal. So in this case, we got $212,000. Now the next question is, what kind of an interest rate are we talking about? Okay, you talk to a bank, you say, all right, we're going to do this on a schedule, a specific amount of money every year for the next 18 years, starting now, 18 payments. Can you lock me an interest rate? Let's say they say, okay, if you're going to do this, if you screw up, all bets are off and we'll just drop that interest rate or we'll take some money away from you. But if you hold on, let's say that they're going to do it at 5.45%. Now, fortunately, this is compounding every year, so we don't have to worry about that. It doesn't really matter too much. Okay. Now, this is an annuity due because you're going to put the first amount of money in right now. Write down the steps, apps, and when you have your calculators on Thursday, finance, TVM solver, how many years? 18. What's your annual percent? And there's no compounding, so it's, well, there is, but it's only yearly. So it's just 18 times 1. Your APR is 5.45, and you don't have to divide it up because it's just one payment every year. You might put it into one of those education accounts or something like that, however it is you want. Now, there's no money up front. You're not putting in a front load of money except for your payment. Now, the only other thing that you're going to, and your future value, you're going to want to put in, you're going to want that future amount of money in 18 years to be $212,000. Last thing, for heaven's sakes, don't forget to toggle end or beginning. This is an annuity due, so you're going to want it on the beginning. And don't forget to put it back to the end for the next one. Always check that down there if it's on the right toggle. Now we just go back up. What's your payments? alpha enter, which is alpha solve. There's no way. Something's wrong. That does not look realistic. Although it's probably right. That's what you have to put in every year so that you'll have that amount of money at the end. Yeah, wow. Your payments out of your pocket are that 6851. So there's your first goal. And then they'll say, okay, well, we want to buy a house in 7 years or 5 years. Okay, there's your next goal. We're going to have another kid in 4 years. Okay, then we'll plan that one for 22 years out. There's your next goal. And we just add up these payments until the person, we've filled in all the gaps. Oh, and we want to retire at 60 with 50 with an annual income of 100,000. Okay, there's another goal. We'll do that on Monday or on Thursday. It's not that hard to do this. Now, here was the disaster. Okay, you've got a lot of crises that are coming up in the next 10 years. I mean, some of them are just unbelievable. Like, for example, the alien invasion. That will be bad. The zombie apocalypse will be horrible. But one that should scare the hell out of you is the pension crisis. It is coming. It'll be one of those things in about 3 to 5 years, all of these pensions all over the country, private and public, are bankrupt. Who would have ever seen that coming? Oh, it's been, we've known for a decade and a half, 2 decades, it was coming. And it's just going to sort of out of nowhere, oh my God, OMG, LOL, WTF, FTS. You see, what the problem was that money was being put into the bank, into an annuity program for a pension, private or public, okay? Now, this money was accumulating like any annuity would. And then we wanted to figure out how much had to be put in every year to have a specific amount here so that then payments could be taken out for the expected life of the retirees. The problem was, as you'll see in our next lecture, that turned really bad because they were assuming interest rates on the forward annuity that were way too high. And so that meant that the amount out here was being calculated wrong, and now we've got essentially most of the pension and annuities are going to be able to pay only about 30% of what they promised these people. But again, that's your problem. I'll be dead. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.